Today's podcast is sponsored by Lamb Weston, your partner in answering the call for crispy fries. Lamb Weston understands how crucial delivery and takeout are to your business. They also know there's nothing worse than soggy fries, especially when your reputation rests on those fries. But not to worry, Lamb Weston is on the case with an entire portfolio of coated fries that hold their crispness from your door to your guests. And now through April 30th, they're offering a free takeout and delivery toolkit, along with a $10 per case rebate on all 26 varieties of Lamb Weston coated fries. Lamb Weston is here to answer your call for crispy, so visit callforcrispy.com to take advantage. That's callforcrispy.com.
What restaurants lost in 2020 and which restaurants won? Hello, I'm Jonathan Mays, Editor-in-Chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I talk with Technomic Principal Joe Pollack about Technomic's Top 500 Chain Restaurant Report. We've been writing about that report over the past couple of weeks. Chain restaurant sales were down a surprisingly low 8.2% last year, but Joe talks about why it was as low as it was and why certain chains struggled more than others. We talk about deep differences, for instance, between fast food performance and casual dining chains. And we discuss challenges in certain sectors, such as buffets. We also talk about why restaurant chains didn't close as many locations last year as anticipated. Please have a listen. All right, I'm here with Joe Pollack. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So, interesting and a very different top 500 this year. I think the headline number I think that we had last week that you had last week was 8.2% growth. To me, I mean, as I'm looking at those numbers, it seems to me that that actually kind of hides really what was pretty broadly weak performance for the vast majority of chains on that ranking.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you misspoke there. It's 8.2% decline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's 8.2%. Yeah. That's right.
You know, last year was, especially when you look at the full service restaurant sector, you know, if you peel back the onion a little bit, full service restaurants among the top 500 were down 29%. Oof. So that they, you know, they really took a hit. And that's not surprising given closures and capacity restrictions. But I'm going to be an optimist and talk about the other side of the coin. I'm going to talk about limited service restaurants. Yeah. Because I think if you and I sat down last April and talked about the overall restaurant business, we would be talking about how the entire business would be impacted more negatively than we saw. Yes. If you look at the top 100, or just let's look at the top 500 limited service chains, they were only down 1% last year. Mm-hmm. So you got to look at what fits into limited service chains. First of all, you think about fast casual. Now, when you think about fast casual, many of them are in urban areas and they cater to the lunch crowd of people that are working in offices. And that has been, you know, we think about that as being an issue. So that drags down a number a little bit. So again, a lot of consumers didn't walk away from food service. They just went to different venues. Now, again, the numbers aren't, you know, we didn't see growth. But again, it's a lot better than we expected, at least better than I expected going in.
Right. Well, I mean, I would have been pretty, I think if you would have asked anybody in the limited service sector and you would have told them that by the end of the year, the entire group sales would be, or just if you just said, hey, your own sales would be down just 1%, they probably would have been leaping for joy. At that point, as in like, oh my gosh, that's going to be a super fast recovery, which of course it was. I would have been completely surprised if you would have told me this a year ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think when we were looking at, you know, a year ago today, let's look back, you know, April of 2020. I mean, we were really in the dark days. I mean, people weren't going out, you know, they weren't out and about, driving on the roads is empty. There was no traffic. And that built up and limited service was the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other big surprise was that like unit count only declined like 2%. And really even that is sort of like 40% came from Subway. Right. I mean, 40% of those units came from Subway. So like that was just, again, I mean, again, if you would have, we would have been talking, in fact, we probably were talking a year ago. We probably said that, you know, that the, that this, that these number, you know, that unit count was just going to like fall a lot more than 2%.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You bring that up, you know, even in full service, which as we know is the most vulnerable. We did an overall analysis on the industry. Full service overall lost about 13% of units last year, but among the top 500, only 4%. So, you know, they weathered the storm a lot better than the very small chain in independents. You know, they have marketing savvy. They're able to, you know, to pivot more towards off-premise. They're already very much in tune to off-premise offerings. Again, just sophistication from a marketing and operational perspective allowed them to do it. It's also interesting that you've had restaurants actually adding units last year. You know, you look at Jersey Mike's added 190 units last year.
Yeah.
Wingstop, 130. Chipotle, about 150. So a lot of units were actually added. You know, net, we were down, but we're still putting in restaurants. And I think that's going to be the story going forward as we have more and more available real estate because of closures of independents and other businesses, that real estate costs are going to come down. It's going to be very inviting for especially the chain market to continue to build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that the thing is like, and as I've been talking to some folks on, you know, one of the surprising things, I mean, one of the things that come out of this is that you didn't see, for instance, a lot as many bankruptcies as we would have thought. Like there were 34, you know, of chains and really large franchisees, which was, you know, I mean, obviously considerably more than the previous 12 months. I mean, it, you know, substantial number of bankruptcy filings, still not nearly as many as you would have imagined would have happened given the pandemic. And I think a lot of that had to do, at least, is that you see a lot of people giving companies a break over the past year. And I think that that's probably, you probably saw that a lot in the chain sector because, you know, I mean, landlords don't want to see a bunch of chains close and, you know, they don't have anyone to lease them to. So, you know, that probably prevented as a lot of closures that might have happened otherwise, I wonder. Just kind of given the way circumstances, you know, given the way circumstances were.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, especially if you're looking at a chain that's, you know, relatively well-funded, has a good financial backing, even though it may be a franchisee, you know, the feeling is from a landlord is that, you know, at the end of the day, how am I going to fill this space? So I might as well take the hit now. And with the hopes of that, things will get better and I'll reclaim some of those funds or, you know, longer term that I've got somebody in this space that's paying rent eventually versus having it open for 12, 24 months and not being able to rent it. And again, a lot of those chains, I think that, you know, that filed last year were ones that were teetering anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, they were close to bankrupt. It's not that we pulled them all the way, that the pandemic was the main reason. It was just I think the last straw that caused the bankruptcy to occur.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I was looking at the other thing is it really did seem that a lot of sales last year were shifted to, I mean, the largest chains really did. I mean, the very largest, the 50 biggest chains really did survive this just a heck of a lot better than everybody else. And I was like looking at, you know, the median sales change. And for the 50 largest chains, it was down 0.8%, which is, you know, I mean, I've down 1% pretty close to that limited service number. And then everybody else, the median was down 19 or close to 20, I guess. And it was, so it was, I mean, it almost seems as if people just said, all right, they dramatically reduced their restaurant visits to casual dining and, you know, smaller chains, and then just kept going to the same large scale concepts. I mean, it wasn't quite there, but I mean, they certainly shifted it, but it was, you know, I mean, a lot of last year's traffic was concentrated in a small number of units.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is, you know, given the pandemic, people wanted comfort. and we're more aligned with brands that they're comfortable and know. So you start thinking about the big brands. Now, on the other side of the coin, when you think about full service, well, why maybe full service didn't do better? Well, you have to remember they were impacted by closures, and some of them maybe took a little time to get delivery and curbside going. And maybe consumers didn't think of them right away as an off-premise meal. Again, they started to get things going, you know, in June, July started coming around. Yeah, they started to get their ducks in a row and started to get some nice traction there. But initially, again, consumers say, well, I'm not thinking about them for off-premise. When I'm thinking about off-premise, I'm thinking about something that I'm comfortable with, I've done it before, and the food's good quality when I do take it off-premise. And that's where quick service, limited service, fast casual did pretty well.
Yeah. The other thing that really sort of stood out to me on this was looking at the fastest growing chains. So the fastest was Wingstop. That's a big chain. Number three, the third fastest growing was Sonic. They had a really good year last year. Marco's Pizza, Popeyes, Freddy's Frozen Custard, Tropical Smoothie, and Jersey Mike's are all big chains that grew, you know, that were among the 10 fastest growing restaurant chains. Almost all of them had unit count growth, though Sonic, interestingly, didn't.
Right.
Obviously that seems to sort of point out this whole idea that like big chains really, really did a lot better than anybody else last year.
Yeah. And Sonic's story, you know, you know, when I saw that number, I was like, you know, wow, that's definitely an outlier, especially from somebody that didn't add units. And you think about, you know, Sonic's value proposition, it was a surrogate for going out to eat for many consumers, you know, the car hop and, you know, pulling up and, you know, people were dining in their car as a way of going out to eat when they couldn't do it going inside a restaurant. So when you kind of think through the mechanics of how consumers select restaurants and their occasions, again, I think that's a very good reasoning of why they've done very well is that whole, it was entertainment for many consumers. The only way they can get entertainment and food at the same time.
Yeah. I saw some statistic that the number of people that ate inside their cars just increased dramatically last year. And that just sort of really was right within Sonic's wheelhouse because you just go and you just park and you can eat and that's basically what it is. And so they just made a whole lot of sense last year. And had a heck of a year doing it. I don't think they got nearly as much attention. Wingstop did, obviously, because they're publicly traded, and then everybody started doing wing chains. But if you factor out the unit growth, I mean, Sonic, frankly, did just about, they did a little better.
Right, yeah. Yeah, again, you're right, because they're not public. They just kind of snuck up on us and, you know, surprised us nicely that they did so well. And, you know, kudos to them relative to their value proposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what kind of themes did you think stood out besides the ones that we've talked about and looking at this year's top 500?
Yeah. You know, I think we've talked about this kind of ad nauseum is pizza and chicken.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about pizza, it's very much the traditional quick service, fast, get the pizza here very quickly. So you're talking about Domino's, you're talking about, you know, even though Pizza Hut was down, a lot of that's because of unit closures as they're trying to rebrand themselves. So I look at them as on a per unit basis, they did, you know, very well. You know, you talk about, you know, Papa John's also, and then also the wing players. You know, you talk about Wingstop, you think about Zaxby's, Raising Cane's. Chicken overall did well, you know, especially as everybody's rolling out, at least, you know, you talk about Popeye's chicken sandwich, Chick-fil-A, which has been doing gangbusters for a number of years. Even KFC did well. And again, I think the issue there is why they've done so well is that the whole idea of families eating together and people can eat together. What do you think about? Well, let's get a pizza. And now with wings, it's very much a family meal that offers variety and flexibility. If you got a family of five, you can order 30 wings and you could get five different varieties. You can get, you know, teriyaki, you can get hot, and you can get different sauces with that as well. So again, it's really conducive to a family meal. So I think that's kind of the big, one of the big issue areas I saw. Certainly breakfast is an area that was hurting last year. Look at Starbucks down 13%, hurt by, you know, people not going to work. The mid-scale family dining sector, that was down pretty dramatically. Although I thought it was pretty interesting that we saw some increase from First Watch. I think they added about 10% of units, but they were down 24% in sales. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you think about that whole mid-scale family dining sector, difficult year, people aren't commuting to work. No business breakfasts, which you might have in one of those places, and you know, people staying at home. And then when you think about delivery occasions, people don't think about getting breakfast delivery. And that's what they view these restaurants as offering, is primarily breakfast, although we know that many of them are trying to promote, you know, lunch and dinner and using delivery as their motivator. So those are kind of, I think, the more menu cuisine things that I saw.
Yeah. That was a pretty bad year for buffet chains last year. Wow.
Yeah. That's going to be a struggle. And I think it's going to be longer term. I think just consumers are, we've done a lot of work talking what consumers are looking for. And I think even post pandemic, it's all about safety and sanitization. So, you know, the self-serve bars, I think that's gone by the wayside. So, you know, as they're doing more employee serve, we know some of them are doing that. We'll just have to see how the consumer reacts to it. I think it's going to be a very very difficult time for many of those buffet chains.
Yeah. It's been a sector that was troubled going into it, right? I mean, that was sort of a tough one anyway. I mean, I think Golden Corral has done fine for a long time, but just like everybody else in that sector has really, really struggled on balance. And, and obviously the pandemic didn't do them any favors. I mean, it's a surprising to me is that we didn't see, I mean, we saw a couple of these traditional buffet chains, you know, go bankrupt, and you had Sioux Plantation do the Chapter 7 thing. And, you had a couple of other bankruptcies in that sector or of similar companies like, you know, Sizzler. But it's almost surprising you didn't see more absolute closures, you know, of buffet chains, given just the way that sector has been operating for a long time.
Yeah. And it could be also, and I think you maybe hit it beforehand, is that that other shoe may be dropping. Because of forgiveness on rents or pushing that down the road a bit. You know, we may be seeing more of that happening this year. Yeah. I think there's some hope that consumers are going to come back in droves. I'm not quite sure that's going to happen. But again, I think we will probably see more closures this year in that sector.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I will. I actually am going to offer a little hint at a future podcast, but there's one. I was talking to a finance guy, and he was basically, you know, we got into a conversation on the bankruptcy situation, you know, and there are, you know, we have not seen the end of the pandemic restaurant chain bankruptcy, simply because a lot of things have been sort of in a hold wait and see mode. In part because, you know, nobody knew exactly what they had and how things were going to go. And, you know, you could still see a number of chains end up in bankruptcy. And and certainly that could feature a number of the buffet type concept. But you could see a lot of these casual dining names and companies of that nature that just been sort of in this, you know, and certainly some family dining names. And they could end up in bankruptcy down the line, because eventually, you know, landlords and lenders are going to want to be paid.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely right. And, you know, we haven't even talked about cost increases, you know, with push for higher wages, you know, living wage, throughout the country. We're seeing commodity costs start to spike. You know, last year menu price inflation was the highest that we've seen since, I believe, 2008. And a lot of that was driven by the operators being able to push price because of delivery costs. And it was kind of built in and operator and and the consumers are saying, well, you know, this is the only way I can get food. Eventually, consumers are going to push back. So they're not going to be able to take those aggressive price increases, and as costs increase, I think we're going to start having a little bit of misalignment between costs and revenues. And that could also be another, again, another shoe that's going to drop that, that could cause more problems financially for a number of companies.
All right. You've hit on a major, major theme of mine right now. So, and that's like, you know, and I've been noticing it. I mean, I just took a look at McDonald's Big Mac and cheeseburger prices and saw some substantial, you know, substantial differentials. And in doing that story, you know, talking to people, and the price of a Big Mac in some places is over $6, which seems ridiculous for McDonald's. And then you have this entire issue, as you mentioned, the delivery charges, and you know, restaurant chains are very aggressive right now in charging higher menu prices for delivery orders. You know, I just had Arby's for lunch, you know, with yesterday. I ordered delivery because I was busy, and it cost us $42 for me and my eldest son who was home, and $42 just for the two of us to have it delivered, and he didn't even get a drink. Of course, he got a second sandwich because he's 16 and he eats like a 16-year-old does. But I mean, you know, like we've seen this over and over again, like where the price right now for me to get a meal delivered from Chick-fil-A or Wendy's or Popeyes or any chain like that is going to cost me roughly the same amount as it costs me to go and visit Applebee's. And I am legitimately concerned on the fast food side. I think it is a, you know, they raise their prices by like what, more than 6%, just the limited service chains, right, by more than 6% over the last year. I don't think that's a sustainable thing. I think eventually people are going to say, whoa. I'm free. It's cost me the same to order this fast food delivery meal as it does for me to go out, you know, to a casual dining chain. I'm going to go out.
And that's right. It definitely is an issue. It's going to come to a head at a certain point. Consumers will just reject it. And we've seen this in the past where, you know, operators put on the gas or press on the gas on menu prices, and then there's a slowdown in traffic. And then what we start seeing is they start to deal back, and then we start seeing inflation numbers in the industry, menu price inflation decelerate. But again, I think the problem is longer term is, you know, we view is that, you know, with all this money out there, we're going to be in a higher inflation period longer term. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for our business? Are we going to be able to pass along those inflationary costs relative to raw materials as an industry without making the consumer reject those? And that could be a problem, again, when we start thinking as the industry recovers, as consumers start getting back to their normal activities. I think right now consumers are just happy to get a meal and getting it, you know, from a restaurant, and are willing to pay a little bit more or a lot more because now I can't go sit down. It's easy. It's convenient. But once we get out and about, I think that the thought is that we're going to start being a little bit more judicious with our dollars and thinking about how we're going to spend them. And, you know, now we've got the stimulus also on top of this, too, which I think, you know, this month in particular, you know, we're starting to see big, big spikes in restaurant sales. So just hope that the restaurant industry and restaurateurs aren't thinking that this is something that is going to continue longer term, that consumers are going to have all this money in their pocket.
No. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, at some point, like it, this becomes a, you know, I mean, eventually people are going to run out of their stimulus cash. I mean, it only lasts. So, I mean, we've seen that, right? You've seen that right. In the last year where, you know, I mean, there's a spike and then it just sort of, well, I mean, there was a first spike and then it just continued as people grew more comfortable eating out at restaurants, but certainly the January spike eased pretty quickly.
Right.
And, you know, at some point people, you know, I mean, this money is going to run out. The economy is going to take over, you know, things do end up, you know, do normalize. You know, there is probably, you got to imagine, right, that there's some benefit to the fact that we do have fewer overall units in the restaurant space, but that never lasts long. People start restaurants quickly, more quickly than you can imagine in this business. And so, you know, I don't know, the pricing is a concern over the long term, that that's going to be, you know, that ultimately is going to hurt this business going forward, especially as some of these other costs are creeping up, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and inflation's always been a something that slows down the industry. If we start seeing, you know, over time, consumers always the judge, and they're the ones that are going to say, you know what, it's getting too expensive, and we're going to cut mm-hmm. back on frequency, or we're going to trade down. But now, you know, as you said, you know, even trading down to limited service where you're paying $42 for a meal for two, you know, then you start thinking about trading out. And that's, you know, thinking about making a sandwich at home as an example, which is certainly not what we want consumers to do.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, super interesting. So what other, anything else that sort of stuck out at you? Any particular restaurant chain that whose performance last year was the most surprising, you think?
Yeah, you know, I think because we heard it early on that they were struggling. I think just because that sector was struggling was in fast casual pizza. Mm-hmm. I think Mod came out with a pretty respectable year, if yeah. I remember correctly, because as again, they're more oriented to on-premise and build your own. I think they did relatively well. I think they're down maybe 5%, if I remember correctly. Don't, again, quote me on it, but they were down, but still not as bad as I thought they might be,
right,
given the situation that we were hearing back in April and May and June, that, you know, consumers weren't thinking pizza. They weren't thinking about building your own. They were thinking about using an app, buying through Domino's and having within 30 minutes at home. That's what they were, you know, that's what they were thinking about. Yeah, they're only down about 5% last year. And I think, you know, again, you know, the whole area of fast casual really surprised me, because I think everybody going in thought that fast casual is really going to get beat up because of their urban locations, and that didn't come to fruition. And again, I think delivery helped them quite a bit. You know, if you look at, I don't know if you've seen the numbers, but, you know, DoorDash basically tripled the number of revenues they get from food orders last year. Mm-hmm. Uber Eats doubled. So, you know, delivery was a godsend for this business, you know, regardless of what they're costing, you know, the price the consumer is willing to pay for. Question is, what does it look like longer term? I know that some of the public companies, I believe is DoorDash, has tamped down their expectations for this year as more openings come. But, you know, that's a concern of investors about, you know, what does the prospects look for delivery as restaurants start to open up?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think you've got for a lot of these chains that delivery certainly helped quite a bit. And, you know, the one that surprised me, to be honest, I'll throw this one out at you, because speaking about delivery and restaurant chains, is Jimmy John's. So Jimmy John's had, you know, their sales declined last year by, let me get their numbers in front of it. Their sales declined by 8.5% last year. And on no way in a market like the one we had last year should they have seen an 8.5% decline in a market where delivery was so important. And that's the one I don't quite, I can guess that, you know, still you have a substantial percentage of their restaurant, of their locations are in urban areas, and you still got a lot of people that walk in and order their Jimmy John's and leave. But you'd still think that a brand that had a well-known, long-term, existing delivery business on its own would have done better than a decline of 8.5%.
Yeah, and I think they're also hurt as Jersey Mike's adds units and gets more, you know, Jersey Mike's been very active with media, building their brand. I think, you know, they're also probably putting a little bit dent into their sales. You know, I think that's also an issue.
Yeah. Jersey Mike's had a great year last year, 19.6% sales growth. I mean, you mentioned our unit growth early on, 11% units. That's they're basically hitting on all cylinders. And I think that they've been very aggressive in courting the delivery customer. I think it's probably helped them a fair bit.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Oof, they're doing really well.
Absolutely. I know they've opened a number of units here in my area. Doing very well from what I can see from my observational research.
Yeah. I think one last one I'm going to ask you about is Subway. Where I mean, they're down to 22,000 units. That's I think that's got to be the lowest in a long time. I don't know exactly when, but it's been a while since they've had 22,000 units. You know, they probably fall below Domino's next year, which is really extraordinary in a couple of years. I mean, we're seeing like is a pandemic just sort of accelerated their free fall, and how much further can they fall? Where do you see the end there?
Yeah, I think they have to do something drastically to regain customers. You know, you talk about delivery too, and you know, given that delivery is, you know, we've done some work around this, and you know, for a delivery customer that's maybe paying, you know, a higher price, and we know that delivery buoyed the industry last year, are they willing to pay, as an example, $25 for a Subway order? Or would they rather go somewhere else that it's worth it? I think that's was part of an issue last year, that it just is more off-premise business. And again, a lot of it delivery focused, that was certainly a problem. Yeah, they're gonna have to, you know, think about and think outside of the box to regain some of the business. They're doing a lot with new menu items. We've seen that. But again, they have to find a way to regain the customer. I think they're still kind of having that problem about people having in their mind that $5 foot long. That, I don't know, how many years ago was that, Jonathan? 15 years ago, 20 years ago?
I think they shifted away from it more or less permanently in 2012. You know, periodically would bring it right up as a, but you know, it's basically, and they haven't really been the same.
Yeah. It was great. It was drove traffic, during that time. But I think what would happen is just that that's what the consumers think about. It's a $5 sandwich. And that's causes, a value, it kind of pitches holes in, puts them in a corner in terms of a value proposition.
Yeah. You got to wonder if they, I mean, obviously they have, there's just like some fundamental problems, too many locations. Their unit volumes are terrible. They have a lot of bad locations that probably need to be closed. You know, a lot of locations in Walmarts and in places that you really shouldn't just stop having a restaurant chain in because it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
But
a lot of fragmentation of franchisees too, a lot of onesies and twosies.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you know, and those guys at some point, you know, I mean, if they could just close real quick and, you know, and that's basically what's happening. A lot of them are just walking away. But you know, I mean, to your point on a $5 foot long, you know, you wonder if it was too successful, right? That it did so well for so long. And it just, I mean, it was so popular for a long time and they probably held on to it too long. And now that just the consumer is just, that's basically to a lot of people what they are.
I think that's exactly right. I think it's still in the minds of many consumers that's what they are.
Yeah. Awesome. Joel, always love talking to you, sir. And thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
My pleasure. Anytime, Jonathan.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited by Kimberly Kazmarek, artwork by Nico Hines and Sarah Stewart. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. You may also find them on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else you get your fancy listening things. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Lamb Weston, your partner in answering the call for crispy fries. Lamb Weston understands how crucial delivery and takeout are to your business. They also know there's nothing worse than soggy fries, especially when your reputation rests on those fries. But not to worry, Lamb Weston is on the case, with an entire portfolio of coated fries that hold their crispness from your door to your guests. And now through April 30th, they're offering a free takeout and delivery toolkit, along with a $10 per case rebate on all 26 varieties of Lamb Weston coated fries. Lamb Weston is here to answer your call for crispy, so visit callforcrispy.com to take advantage. That's callforcrispy.com.